That primitive appearance proved deceptive, because their farming methods are sophisticated, so much so that European agronomists still don't understand today, in some cases, the reasons why New Guineans' methods work and why well-intentioned European farming innovations failed there. For instance, one European agricultural advisor was horrified to notice that a New Guinean sweet potato garden on a steep slope in a wet area had vertical drainage ditches running straight down the slope. He convinced the villagers to put in drains running horizontally along contours, according to good European practices. Awed by him, the villagers reoriented their drains, with the result that water built up behind the drains, and in the next heavy rains, a landslide carried the entire garden down the slope into the river below. That's only one of the techniques that New Guineans worked out over the course of thousands of years for growing crops in areas receiving up to 400 inches of rain per year, with frequent earthquakes, landslides, and at higher elevations, frost. To maintain soil fertility, they resorted to a whole suite of techniques, besides the silviculture that I'll explain in a moment. They added weeds, grass, old vines, and other organic matter to the soil as compost at up to 16 tons per acre. They applied garbage, ash from fires, rotten logs, and chicken manure as mulches and fertilizers to the soil surface. They dug ditches around fields to lower the water table and prevent waterlogging, and transferred the organic muck dug out of those ditches onto the soil surface. Legume food crops that fix atmospheric nitrogen, such as beans, were rotated with other crops. In effect, an independent New Guinean invention of a crop rotation principle now widespread in first world agriculture for maintaining soil nitrogen levels. Sustainable agriculture in the New Guinea highlands poses difficult problems not only of soil fertility, but also of wood supplies as a result of forests having to be cleared for gardens and villages. Originally, the highlands were covered with oak and beech forests, but thousands of years of gardening have left the most densely populated areas completely deforested up to an elevation of 8,000 feet. Where do the highlanders obtain the wood they need? On the first day of my visit to the highlands in 1964, I saw groves of a species of a casuarina tree in villages and gardens, also known as she-oaks or ironwood. Casuarinas are a group of several dozen tree species with leaves resembling pine needles, native to Pacific Islands, Australia, Southeast Asia, and tropical East Africa, but now widely introduced elsewhere because of their easily split but very hard wood. A species native to the New Guinea highlands, Casuarina oligodon, is the one that several million highlanders grow on a massive scale, by transplanting seedlings that have sprouted naturally along stream banks. So extensive is the scale of transplanting that the practice is now referred to as silviculture. Casuarina oligodon is fast-growing. Its wood is excellent for timber and fuel. Its root nodules that fix nitrogen and its copious leaf fall add both nitrogen and carbon to the soil. The roots hold soil on steep slopes and thereby reduce erosion. Highlanders also say that they appreciate their casuarina groves for aesthetic reasons, because they like the sound of the wind blowing through the branches, and because the trees provide shade to the village. Thus, even in broad valleys from which the original forest has been completely cleared, silviculture permits a wood-dependent society to continue to thrive. I have presented New Guinea highland casuarina silviculture as an example of bottom-up problem-solving, even though there are no written records to tell us exactly how the technique was adopted. But it could hardly have been by any other type of problem-solving, because New Guinea highland societies represent an ultra-democratic extreme of bottom-up decision-making. Until the arrival of Dutch and Australian colonial government in the 1930s, there had not been even any beginnings of political unification, merely individual villages. Within each village, instead of hereditary leaders or chiefs, there were individuals called big men, who by force of personality were more influential than other individuals, but still lived in a hut like everybody else's, and tilled a garden like anybody else's. Decisions were, and often still are today, reached by means of everybody in the village sitting down together and talking, and talking, and talking. The big men couldn't give orders, and they might or might not succeed in persuading others to adopt their proposals. That must have been the context in which casuarina silviculture and all those other useful agricultural practices were adopted in the New Guinea highlands. People in any village could see the deforestation going on around them, could recognize the lower growth rates of their crops as gardens lost fertility, and experience the consequences of timber and fuel scarcity. New Guineans are more curious and experimental than any other people that I have encountered. Whenever I take New Guineans to work with me in areas away from their own village, they are constantly picking up local plants, asking local people about the plants' uses, and selecting some of the plants to bring back with them and try growing at home. In that way, someone 1,200 years ago would have noticed the casuarina seedlings growing beside a stream, brought them home as yet another plant to try out, noticed the beneficial effects in a garden, and then some other people would have observed those garden casuarinas and tried the seedlings for themselves. Besides problems of wood supply and soil fertility, New Guinea highlanders also faced a population problem as their numbers increased. That increase became checked by war, infanticide, use of forest plants for contraception and abortion, and sexual abstinence and natural lactational amenorrhea while a baby was being nursed. New Guinea societies thereby avoided the fates that many other societies suffered through deforestation and population growth. Today, New Guineans are facing a new population explosion because of the success of public health measures, introduction of new crops, and the end or decrease of intertribal warfare. New Guineans adapted in the past to the end of the ice ages, the development of agriculture, massive deforestation, volcanic fallouts, El Niño events, the arrival of the sweet potato, and the arrival of Europeans. Will they also be able to adapt to the changed conditions producing their current population explosion?